Vamp Actors here with us. He is part of our fellowship here. He's a regular attender, I guess you could say. We don't really have a formal membership, so I can't say he's a member, but and just a great friend and brother of ours, and he's going to come and share what God uses him for all around the world and even right here in our fellowship. So I'm sure he's going to explain much more about that. So would you help me just welcome Adrian Vamp Actor here this morning?
There's no slits, cuts, trap doors, secret passageways, or underground tunnels.
Thank you.
are there any questions? Thank you. Yeah, I get that one a lot. How do you do it? Usually I say, very well. People always ask me to teach them sleight of hand. I thought this would be a great opportunity to do that. But I'll need a volunteer. Let's see here. And this volunteer will need to submit to a simple test. This you can be an apprentice. This is what you have to do. Okay, I need someone to give it a try. Sir? Chop. Toss in the bed. Bummer. Can you give it a try? You want to try? Reach out and go like this. Drop it right in there. Go like this. Yeah. Come here. Come here. That was great. Come on up. You're awesome. All the way to the middle. Take a bow. Stay. Smile. Thanks, London. You know we're taking two offerings, did you? Sure, if you would please. Stand right over here. Just lean forward a little bit. Thank you very much. Yeah. Well, I know this is a little bit unusual for a Sunday morning service, but, you know, Bo and Pastor Scott said, hey, just let people know what you do, and don't forget to do a demonstration, so there you go. I want to do one more for you, though, and the reason is that I don't just go and entertain. We also talk a lot about deception, and this last thing I want to do for you is kind of controversial a lot of times, because people think, oh, you know, this... what you're doing is real. And so I'll make it very clear right off the start that what I'm about to do is accomplished entirely by natural means. In fact, anytime you see an illusionist or a magician or even a psychic on television or YouTube or on a street corner, just remember you heard it here. It's just a trick. It's not real. There's no such thing as real magic. You know, like Psalm 72:18, blessed be the Lord God of Israel who alone works miracles. So keep that in mind. What I have here is, can anyone tell me how many cards are in a pack of playing cards? All the gamblers speak up. Yes, I have a pack of cards. I have 52 cards here, and I've wrapped them with a rubber band. I don't have much time, so I just did it ahead of time, but usually I have someone come up and shuffle the cards, but to save time, I just gone ahead and wrapped them with a rubber band. The reason I've done this is in a moment, I'm going to turn my back, and I'm going to toss these cards into the audience. If the cards come to you, catch them. If they go to your friend, let them catch them. No diving. And once you catch them, I want you to, you can open the pack anywhere you want. Just one spot, anywhere in the pack. You can just flip it open like this. And then you can take a glance at the card where you opened. And remember that card, okay? Of course, don't pick the bottom card, because I already know it. And I kind of saw the top card when I was wrapping the rubber band. I think it's like a jack or something. But anyway, don't pick that one. So any 50 cards in the middle, feel free. Are you ready? Full of energy. That's great. 1, 2, 3. Good catch. Wow, I'm impressed. Now, if you would, just stand up. And remain standing. Open the pack anywhere you like, and then just glance at a card and memorize that card. But don't let anyone behind you see what you're looking at. Just remember that card. Just take a look and just remember that any one card. You have it? Now, gently, up into the air behind you, toss the cards in any direction. You can go this way, that way, or straight back, entirely up to you. That works. Sir, if you would please stand up. And remain standing, if you would please. Take a look at any one card. You have it? Same thing, very gently toss them behind you in any direction. let's toss them. How about the guy in the red shirt here? That's close to you. Oh, Richard's got him. Richard, you're going to have to do it. Take a look at any card, Richard. You have one? You please stand up. And toss the cards towards people. Jerry, gently and nice and high so they have a chance to catch it. Nice and high, gently. Okay, that's okay. At least you're not college students. Usually they just go... let's see. Go ahead and take a look at any one card. Memorize the one card. And then toss the cards again. Gently. Towards people. We'll do one more. This will be the last one. Go ahead, take a look at any one card. Memorize the card. When you're done, toss the cards back up to me up here. This will be interesting. Well done. It made it. if anyone looked at a card, would you please stand up? How many do we have? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Very good. 52 cards, but 5 people. Now, I want you to think about your card. Now, there's no way I could know what card you looked at. It would be impossible. I didn't handle the card. You all simply just picked any spot and looked at them. Now, I want you to concentrate on your card. And in a moment, I'm going to try to capture your thought, you might say. So concentrate on the card you looked at. And what you need to do is, since you're the gamblers in the audience, you need to give me a really good poker face. So if I get it right, don't react. If I get it wrong, don't react. Don't give me any indication as to whether I'm accurate or not. And just try to keep a straight face and... if we can do this. Focus on the card. Focus on the music. Okay, I'm seeing a card. It's a red card. It's a face card. It's a king. Don't say anything just yet. It's a king of diamonds. King of diamonds and a five of clubs. Yeah, that was clear. Whoever had the five... Okay, hold on. I'm seeing a red card, a seven of hearts, and a... It looks like a spade, a ten of spades. And a four of diamonds. Four of diamonds, ten of spades, king of diamonds, five of clubs, and a seven of hearts. And I didn't get any reaction from anybody. It's either you're very good or I'm very bad. Yeah, ten of spades is clear. King of diamonds was clear. The four of diamonds was clear. The seven of hearts, five of clubs. Yeah, I think that's it. I'm not getting anything else, so if you heard your card, have a seat. Spooky. Again, that was just a trick. I could teach you how to do it in 5 minutes. Unfortunately, we're so tight on time today. It's going to be tough to muster up that 5 minutes. I was like, is that clock right? I try to explain to everyone whenever I perform as an illusionist is that everything I do is just a trick. And the reason I do examples like this, you would think, well, why do you do these mind-reading kinds of things? Is because in many of the places that I perform in, there are many people who have been sort of taken captive by all kinds of superstitious, occultic, and false beliefs about the paranormal. Tea leaf readers, palm readers, psychics, gurus claiming to be God, the Sangoma from South. I mean, you, those of you who have seen me before, you've probably heard me say this many times, the same little speech, but there are all kinds of varieties. And so typically I'll do something like this just to give the audience a good picture that, hey, anyone can do this. I'm coming right out and saying it's just a trick. And in really superstitious cultures, I'll even explain how I just did it. And I can't do all the crazy effects that I normally would do in a full 90-minute program, but that was just a taste. And then at this point, I would usually ask the question, hey, you know, if what I have just shared is just an illusion, and the things that you see on the street corners and the things that cause fear in your life are also just an illusion, a lie. Like in South Africa, I'd ask the students on college campus, I say, now, you all live with fear every day, and it's true. And they say, yeah, I'm always afraid of spirits and curses, and even Christians. They'll go to church on Sunday, and then during the week, they'll go to the witch doctor to get any curses removed from their lives. If they're having a hard time in relationships, not getting along with the family, struggling with jobs, health, they think, oh, I must have an evil spirit. I got to go to the witch doctor. He'll perform this communication with the spirit world. He'll talk to the spirits in the flask, throw the bones, look at me through the mirror, and then the spirits will tell him what to do. And then he'll pass that information to me from the ancestral spirit. So in my program, I would actually communicate with the spirit world. I would have the chalkboards and do this really elaborate routine where I would say, hey, we're going to think of someone, random, famous person who has died who can communicate with us. And the audience would freak out. I mean, they'd be like running out the door. And then the usher would like bring it back and say, okay, let me explain to you how it works. And I go into great detail explaining exactly how I accomplished the effect. And then they're, of course, laughing now because they think, oh, wow, this is so simple. And then I say, now, you live in fear every day. And now that you know the truth, is there any reason to fear what I've just done? And they say, no. Now, does someone who is lying to you and you know the truth, does that person have any power over you? And they say, no. I say, then if they have no power over you, then there's no reason to fear, right? Right. So there's no reason to fear at all. And you can just see the liberation in people's eyes when you explain that simple truth that you don't have to fear anymore. And of course, we know that, you know, the scriptures tell us 365 times, enough for every day of the year, do not fear. Do not fear. And then I go on to say, so why do people believe these things? What is it in people that causes them to search for the supernatural? And I've had the privilege of traveling all over the globe. I've been to, 37 countries and 6 continents, 22 or 23 of those countries. I did an extensive tour doing my program. And I've met so many fascinating people, different walks of life, different religious beliefs. And I have found that no matter how different we are, there are some things that are very much the same. And that is that people are searching for hope in life, and they're not finding it. They simply want to know that they are a part of something greater than themselves, something greater than what they can see, hear, taste, touch, and smell. You know, what's very interesting is that the same is true in my own life, or was true in my own life. People often ask me, why did you become an illusionist? Why do you do what you do? Well, typically I'll say, when I was 9, I saw David Copperfield walk through a solid steel wall down at the U of A, at Centennial High, I believe it was. And that was the event that sparked my interest in the art of illusion, but that wasn't my real motivation. My real motivation began much sooner, when I was about 7 years old. When I was 7, my parents divorced, and my father, he remarried about 3 months later. He wasted no time. And, I so wanted to be with my dad that at 7 years old, I ran away from home. And I went looking for him. In fact, I remember I was walking down golf links right around Harrison, just walking, 7 years old, looking for my dad's house. I was gone. I made it like a whole day until the police finally found me on the side of the road, dehydrated, took me back home. And, you know, my mom, bless her heart, she knew that I just wanted to be with my dad. And rather than drag me through a whole court fight about who gets who, she just decided to let me live with my dad. So I left my little brother and my little sister behind and moved in with my dad. And I was in for a big surprise because the woman that he married already had 4 children of her own. So I became an instant youngest. 3 new older brothers, a new older sister. And I'll be honest with you, I hated it. No matter how hard I tried, I could never fit in this new family. We were very competitive, and it just seemed like I was never good enough at anything. We also, part of the reason I think is because my mom, my birth mother, is from Mexico, so she's a foreigner, and oftentimes my stepbrothers would treat me like a foreigner, like I didn't belong there. In fact, I grew up with every racist name that people had ever come up with for people from Mexico. Even through high school, people rarely called me by my first name. It was always one of those racist nicknames that my stepbrothers would come up with. So I didn't have the greatest high school experience. We also moved often. By the time I reached high school, I had already attended 10 different schools. We moved about every 6 months. So it was very difficult for me to keep friends and build relationships. I grew up very alone, very empty on the inside. And one day, I learned a trick from a book. And I did one of those tricks for one of my stepbrothers. And he looked at what I was doing, and he smiled, and he said, "Cool." I'll never forget that. The first time in my life I did something that brought a smile to his face. Their faces. So I determined in that moment this is what I wanted to do. I wanted to become an entertainer. And, finished high school, went on to begin. I was competing in competitions, and at 19 years old, I won the internationals in Las Vegas. And began to tour around the world, became very successful. People admired what I had accomplished. People were attracted to my success. And it felt really good. Really good. In fact, I remember at 17 years old, I was so tired of living with this situation that I ran away from home again. Not a literal running away. I just went to visit my mother for the weekend and didn't come back. And I remember I was with my magic teacher, who I was at his television studio, and I was talking with my dad on the phone, and I said, "Well, Dad, I told you months ago that I really wanted to move back in with my mom, and And you said I could, but you didn't want me to. But you said I could, so here I'm doing it. And he said, well, you're never welcome in my home ever again, and you're no longer my son. And, you know, I was devastated, and he didn't call me on my 18th birthday, didn't show up for my graduation. But it was okay, because I found something. I was going to put all that behind me. I had just one focus. I'll prove them wrong. And I did. But I'll be real honest. As good as it felt getting that phone call years later from my dad saying, hey, son, how's it going? You know, it's so neat that you're doing what you're doing. You know, I want to have you over and hear what's going on. It's so neat that you tour around the world and do what you do. And it's like that other stuff never happened. And I pretty much pretended like it never happened too. But I'll be honest, whenever I was performing, whenever the show was over, the lights would go down, the audience would leave, still empty, still alone. None of that really mattered, because, it was superficial. I remember hearing a story of a man who was so depressed that... I think I already told this story once before. I'll just skip. I think on a Wednesday night. So anyhow, there came a point in my life where I began to ask questions. Why am I here? And where am I going? And what does living really mean? My dad was an atheist, agnostic. The only time I ever heard the word God was when he was cursing. And it wasn't until I started hanging out with this magic club, Society of American Magicians, where I began to meet all these born-again believers. First ones I had ever met, at least as far as I knew. I remember growing up and visiting my grandparents in Mexico and, you know, always thinking, wow, they're going to take me to Mass. Who's this Mexican guy named Jesus? You know, I thought Jesus was from Mexico and he spoke Spanish. That's how much I knew. Later on, I realized that this Jesus was a real person in history and that he was alive today. And that he provided answers to life's most difficult questions, like, what is the true meaning and purpose of life? Why are we really here? And in my late teenage, early college age years, I just knelt down at the foot of my bed, literally at the foot of my bed, by myself, and just asked him, you know, I believe you. I believe that you're real. And I want you to come into my life. And I want you to make it what you want it to be. And for the very first time, from my own personal experience, life became complete. Whoops. He's perfect, but not every illusionist is. Now, that's just a small picture of what I do as an illusionist. I'll typically do another illusion, and then I'll invite the audience to stay for a gospel presentation, and then I'll actually share the gospel and invite people to accept Christ right then and there. And, that's just my story. And every single one of you has a story. God's been working in your life from who knows when. And each and every one of us has a story. And as Scott has been sharing over the last couple weeks, that I just caught notice that he kept mentioning this, that God's ultimate goal for you and for me is to become more like Christ. And that's been just so... wow, you know, it's a good reminder. It's like, yeah, I remember hearing about that, but, you know, I'm an entertainer. I kind of fly by the seat of my pants, and, yeah, he wants me to become more like Jesus, not just go and win awards and just enjoy being saved. And But beyond that, God's goal or his passion is a love for the nations. God's heart is for the nations. And his goal is to draw as many to have a people for himself. And that's his ultimate goal. And those people he brings to himself, he wants to conform them to the image of his son. I remember that passage in Revelation. I just think it's, every time I read it, in Revelation 7:9, it says, after this I looked, and there, behold, before me was a great multitude that no one could count, from every nation, tribe, people, and language, standing before the throne and in front of the Lamb. You know, sometimes when I'm standing in front of a crowd, I'm reminded of that passage and think, how many of these individuals will be one of those tribes, nations, and tongues will be standing before the throne of God in that moment. And it's just really I can't even say the word. It's hard to fathom the magnitude of such an event. That's the heart of God, is the nations. And to take individuals and chip away the old you and the old me. And, you know, that process begins the moment you say, I do. And you become part of the bride of Christ. The moment you say, I do, he starts chiseling away the old you. And there's a lifelong process. And it's painful. It hurts. I remember when I first became a believer, oh gosh, I was just on fire for evangelism. And I was like really offending everybody I knew. Because, you know, new believers make the best evangelists. You know, they're the ones that jump out into the mission field right away. And, you know, they don't know, have a clue. I didn't have a clue. I was just like, everybody needs to experience what I'm experiencing. It's fantastic, and we need to just encourage them and send them out. But this guy who was helping me schedule a tour, doing an anti-drug and alcohol magic show throughout the Midwest, I did like 125 performances in 5 weeks. I put like 14,000 miles in my truck in 1 month. And so I was doing like 3 shows a day, and it's crazy. But he and I were driving along in Texas, and I'm just sharing with him, and he's like, you know, I went to seminary. And I went, you went to seminary? He goes, yeah, I went to seminary. And you know, I went through what you're going through. And, you know, we were debating back and forth. I was like, yeah, but the way you live, and, you know, I mean, you never talk about it. And, okay, maybe that's cool, but, like, really? And he said, well, you know, you're radical, you're, you know, idealistic, you're young. Don't worry, you'll get over it. And gosh, it's been, since that conversation, 20 years, and I haven't gotten over it yet. Yeah. Amen. You know, we stumble, we fall, but we, you know, someone said the most amazing thing to me about, I don't know, 3 or 4 months ago. It actually really, like, I always knew this, but it radically influenced me. Thank you, Caleb, for this. He said, you know what, the righteous man falls 7 times and he gets up 7 times. And I have a feeling that this individual, at one point in life, had a major hard time. Like, something happened, and it just, life wasn't going for him, or whatever it might have been, and he gave up. Gave up, and it's just so, so sad. But so God's goal for you and for me is to become more like Christ, and the amazing thing is he's going to take these weak vessels. You know, he takes the lesser vessels to confound the wise. And he's going to use us. Why on earth he would do this, I don't know, but he's going to use us to be a mouthpiece to the nations, to fulfill his heart, his passion, his love for the nations. And so I'm going to do a little illustration to kind of get a picture of what God is doing in the world. How many people are in the world today? Take a wild guess. Anybody? 100,000? There's about nearly 7 billion people in the world today. When I think of Revelation, I wonder how many billions upon billions, maybe even, who knows, because it's the whole of human history, not just who's alive today that gets saved. Well, they're the ones that are getting saved, but those who have got saved, who knows? I mean, but just picturing just who's alive today, 7 billion people is also... That word I can't say, unfathomable. And to kind of get a picture of how God's operating in the world today, I'd like to invite the volunteers that I've asked to help me to come up now. Did you grab a helper? All right, great. Come on up. Just hold this. Don't show it, but just keep it to your chest. Hold on to that. Keep it to your chest and just put your back to the audience. Now, I've got, I've got 9 people who represent the world. And we're going to break them up into 3 groups. So if you guys would move over just a little bit, and you guys squeeze together just a little bit, perfect. So we've got the world that's broken up into 3 major groups, okay? Now, the first group... we're going to call active Christians. And you'll be Joe Christian. He's our active Christian. Go ahead and show us who you are. Now, Joe here serves in his local church and is very active. He probably shares his faith. He probably reads his Bible on a regular basis. He probably goes to church once or twice a week, maybe once a week. He's very actively involved. His faith is a dynamic in his life. He prays. He fellowships with God. He confesses his sin. He participates in the life of the body of Christ, and he has a growing faith. You see that he may not be sinless, but he's sinning less as he grows in his faith and he matures. And as he goes through and experiences trials and tribulations, you know, this is like the Christian that we here in this fellowship hope that we can all relate to. And next to him are two other groups that fall under this section of people over here. If you two wouldn't mind turning around. These are folks that are considered Christian. So this group is the reached part of the world. About 2.3 billion people in the world today are represented by this section right here. So you've got the about 700 million Joe Christians here, the active Christians, and the rest of that 2.3 billion, well, they're nominal Christians. They're just guilt by association. They're not active. They're Christians in name only. In some countries, when you're born in, as a Christian, they actually put it on your birth certificate, like, for example, in the Middle East or in South Asia. Many of the places I go to, sometimes I'll meet a Christian, and I'll say, oh, wow, you're a Christian. And then I realize, no, they're not. It just says that on their birth certificate because they were born into a Christian family. And so they'll say, no, I'm a Christian because that's what I was born. You know, like I was born an American. That's religion to them is the same as how we would view our nationality. What, you know, the country we're born into, well, that makes me an American, et cetera, et cetera. Anyhow, so we have nominal Christians. They go to church maybe once or twice a year on special occasions. They'll get married in the church because that's important. They'll sort of pay their respects to Father God, and that's about it. They're not active, and most of these individuals are probably not born again. They're not actually saved. They're just nominal, but they're reached. They've heard the gospel, and they have connection or contact with someone who is a Christian in a church. Now, this middle group here are going to represent another segment of the reached world. And go ahead and turn around, fellas. These guys represent the non-Christians in the world within reach of a church. So these are people who still are in reach parts of the world, but they themselves have not actually have associated themselves with Christianity. So these individuals would be, you know, our neighbors, people that we meet every day. They could walk down the street and go to a church and hear the gospel. They hear the gospel, but they just have not become Christian. So they're reached in a sense in that they're in the reach part of the world. Okay? So that's the other third. Now, the last third of the world's population are these individuals over here. And this group over here, this is the dividing line, this music stand. This is the reached part of the world, and this is the unreached part of the world. Okay? Now, these individuals, we have Muslims. Who's our Muslim guy? All right, that's about 1.6 billion people in the world are part of the unreached people group, Muslims. Now, obviously, there's going to be people from here that are actually saved. We're not saying that there are no Muslim believers or anything like that. So there's a lot of crossover. But in general, as just a matter of fact, this is considered the unreached part of the world. Sometimes they'll call it the 1040 window, that segment of the world that's basically not as evangelized as the rest of the world. So we have 1.6 billion Muslims, and that's about, that's quite a bit. That's about, let's see, what is that? That's about a fourth or a fifth of the world's population who is considered Muslim and unreached. The other group is, let's go with the Hindus next, because they're a little bit bigger group. The Hindus, we're going to mix them with two different groups. Right? The Hindus, there's about almost a billion Hindus in the world. And So you've got your non-religious people who just don't care or don't have, you know, who knows how they associate with themselves. And then you've got your Muslims. They believe that, you know, there is only one God and Muhammad is their prophet. And they believe that Jesus was a prophet, but he wasn't the Son of God, nor did he die on the cross. And that the New Testament, which they call the Injil, has been changed throughout time. And so what Christians believe about Jesus has been corrupted. And they have the authentic source of Jesus' life from the Quran, which talks a lot about Jesus, but their version is correct and our version is incorrect. And then you have the Hindus. The Hindus, they believe in about 300, they have about 330 million gods to choose from. And they have several different paths. It's very broad. I mean, there are about as many religious views as there are Hindus. but they can choose the way of devotion by devoting themselves to a particular deity or by being good, by serving by good works. They believe in reincarnation. Every birth is a rebirth. And they also believe in karma. Karma is the idea that your life currently, you're paying out whatever debt you had to accumulated in the previous life. So if you lived a good life, then you'll come back maybe in a higher caste. But if you were, let's say, an abusive individual, you'll come back in another life as the abused. And so people like Mother Teresa created a lot of problems because Hindus were saying, look, you're ruining these individuals' payment of their karma. They're supposed to be poor. They're supposed to. And now they're going to have to be reborn again to experience that all over again because you robbed them of them paying out their karma. So it was a big no-no. You would think, oh, they must have loved that. No, it was a big no-no. But, you know, when you're poor, you're like, I don't care, help me. So we're going to say the Hindus, there's about almost a billion individuals. And then these other tribal groups, there's about, I don't know, maybe a half a billion people, various tribal religions in Africa and China. And then this last group is the Buddhists and atheists. This represents about... let's see, there are 626 million Buddhists, and about 700 million people in the world that would identify themselves as non-religious. But what I'm focusing in on is the individuals that live in like the former Soviet Union, Eastern Europe, China, people who just say, I'm not religious at all. I remember my third tour in China, I would meet with college students, and they'd say, yeah, I just don't have a religion. And so what you're doing is wonderful because we need a religion. I just thought, that's weird. You're liking what I'm doing because you think you just need a religion because you don't have one. Okay. So, you know, and this is individuals within those regions, not necessarily representative of that whole country. Like, we don't say all of China is non-religious. Obviously, there's a lot of religious people in China. So this whole third, more than a third of the world's population is considered unreached. Now, how is God operating in this situation? Well, God's heart is for the nations, and he chooses men and women like you and me to send us out, whether bivocationally, meaning we have other jobs, and we just, as we go about our daily business, share with our friends, family. Some of us will go out on a mission trip on occasion. Some of us will do it full-time. Some of us will do tent making. In this part of the world, most people have to do tent making because they can't openly share the gospel in most of these places, or at least they think they can. We'll get to that in a minute. But I'm going to, you know, let me go to this passage that I just want to read to you. It's Matthew chapter 9. Jesus says to his disciples, the harvest, mainly these guys now, is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. So whether or not you believe that you're called to be in full-time ministry or not is irrelevant. I need 10 individuals who will right now raise your hand and say, I'll go, send me, Lord. Real quick, and just line up. Come on up. If you just line up right here. But you have to shout, I'll go, send me.
I'll go, send me.
All right, come on up. Come on up. I need 10. The first 10 gets a cookie. No, I'm kidding. No cookies. Stand right here and just line up. But you have to say, I'll go, send me. All right, awesome. Okay, we've got five. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean that this is what you want to do. This is just for illustration purposes. So if you're like, hey, I'm a doctor or I'm an engineer, raise your hand and say, I'll go, send me. There's a guy in the back. Okay, we need four more. There's Three more. Yay. Two, four, six, eight, nine. We need one more. There we go. Awesome. These are the people that we send to the mission field. Because the way we reach this part of the world is through cross-cultural mission or cross-cultural workers. People who don't know the language are going to go outside of their own culture. These are what we're taught. This is what's being represented here. This is not necessarily like a pastor, but just people who are going to step outside of their own culture and go and reap the harvest. And you, the audience, are the senders. For every full-time worker, it takes like 20, 30, maybe even 50 senders to get a person up here full-time in ministry. All right. Now, each of you are being sent by everyone behind you, and they're praying and sending you. So, Lord, let's bless these individuals to go and reach the world. Now, I want each of you, now you need to say, God, where do you want me to go? Okay? Now, rather than taking the next week or so to decide that, I want you to just go and reach what, because remember, there's a lot of non-Christians here. You go anywhere you feel led to go. So why don't you, all of you, just go to the group, that one-third of the world that you want to work in. In fact, why don't you stay on the floor? That might be easier because there's a lot of sound equipment, and I want to be able to move you around. So why don't you guys just go ahead and step down on the floor, but stand in front of the group that you want to reach. I meant to say that earlier. Okay, so we've got four individuals in this third. We've got three individuals in this third and three individuals over here. Well, that's pretty balanced, isn't it? What do you guys think of that? It's pretty good. I'm thrilled with that. Now, I just got to ask, what time are we supposed to be done? Like 5 minutes? Okay. All right. Okay. All right. Let me give you a quick, clear picture of reality. I want everyone to, let's see, we got one, two, three, four. I want the three of you to move over here. All right? And just go all the way, scoot, scoot, so that everyone can see that you're actually serving to reach that group. And then I want all three of you to come over here, but I want one of you to stand in the middle. Why don't you go ahead and stand in the middle over here, right in the between. Yep. And face everyone, if you would, please. And then just hold out your left arm like this. Yeah, perfect, perfect. You don't have to hold that very long. This is reality. You know, the evangelical church, the body of Christ today, I don't know, someone said we have about $12.5 trillion, something like that. And everything of everything we give and the workers we send, about 99 cents of every dollar goes to reaching our own, our own spheres of influence, the reached. 99 cents of every dollar. And 9 out of every 10 workers are reaching the reached. These guys have access to the gospel. They've probably heard the gospel. They just haven't made a commitment to Christ. Same with most of the folks over there. They've all heard the gospel. They're reached. God's heart is for the nations. He said, go therefore to all the nations and make disciples. Over here, in terms of workers, only her arm has been going to reach the unreached. That's representative of reality right now. Just her arm, not even whole her person. If you take basically less than 1%, a half a percent is reaching the unreached, a whole third of the world that has never heard the gospel and has no access to a church or the ability to hear the gospel. You guys can all have a seat, and the rest of you can too. Thank you so much. Well, that took a lot longer than I planned. So what do we do about this? This isn't a bad thing. It's just reality. We want to reach everybody. We need, praise God, there are 7% or 70% of all full-time cross-cultural missionaries reaching those nominal Christians. I mean, when you go to Egypt, you would think, oh, wow, it's all Muslim. No, there's tons and tons of Orthodox, Christians that just don't know the Lord. They're very religious, but they don't have a personal relationship with God, and they're probably not born again. They're probably relying on their own religious works to gain merit with God. And we all know that that just doesn't fly. And so we need people reaching these individuals. But this is a third of the world's population. What are we going to do? Well, we can do exactly what Jesus said to do. We can pray, as he said, because he said, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. So we can pray. And so that's what I do. I try to emphasize and focus my attention on unreached parts of the world. I just went on, I think, my 42nd mission trip in Turkey, Kyrgyzstan, and Iraq. And actually, this last mission was, I was sent by this fellowship. It was really amazing feeling to be sent by my own fellowship. But last year, the pictures you've been seeing this whole time was my last year's tours of Egypt and South Africa. And I've shared a little bit about some of the dynamics in South Africa and Egypt. I think in South Africa, I had 62 performances. We had about 15,000 attend. And in Egypt, we did this big festival. It was really amazing, where all these people were being bussed into this festival grounds, and they brought in all these Christian speakers and entertainers from all over the world to just do a whole day of variety performing arts. And so we reached like 12, 13,000 people a day, and each of us had our own like venue, tent, and it was like a theme park. You know, I'm going to go see the juggler, and then I'm going to go see the martial artist, and then I'm going to go see the illusionist. And each one has a unique way of sharing the gospel and a unique testimony. And so they're the ones that put on this tour in Iraq. We did this, basically duplicated what we did in Egypt in northern Iraq, and it was very successful. We had thousands of people come out during the 3 days that we had the festival in Iraq. But during that time, I also spent some time in Turkey. And I wasn't sure what to expect. I thought, well, Turkey is definitely a closed country, right? You can't go around sharing the gospel. You have to be a tent maker missionary. That's the kind of person who will go in as a doctor or an English teacher. And then just by casually building relations with the people, maybe they'll have a chance to share the gospel, maybe with one person a year, depending on how bold they are. But if they get discovered, they might get sent home, that kind of thing. Well, I found out that Turkey is the most unreached country in the world. The most unreached. I had no idea. Second, it's completely legal and open and free to share. I actually was sharing the gospel. That's my gospel illustration. And that's the team I was with. We do comment cards afterwards, and it's completely open and free to share there. In fact, it's more illegal to stop and oppress someone for sharing their faith than it is to share your faith. If there's two guys on the street, one sharing his faith and the other guy is trying to shut him up, the guy who's quieting him down is going to be the one who's going to get arrested. I was like, really? How did I not know this before? How come we're not all here? I mean, there are 70 million people here in this country, and it's the most unreached, but there's a lot of hard-heartedness. People are not open to the gospel there. But I was so blown away. This is Kyrgyzstan, but in Turkey, I thought, I don't do street performing a lot. I mean, it's fun, but you draw a crowd, and as soon as they lose interest, they walk away. And I thought, as soon as I mention Jesus, they're going to be like walking away. So we had a variety of performing arts team. Dancers, singers, I had violinists and guitar players playing while I was sharing my testimony. It was really amazing. And the dancers would draw the crowd, and then I would try to get the crowd bigger, and then I'd share my testimony, and then I'd share the gospel presentation, and only probably 5% of the audiences would leave. The rest stayed. And this one guy came up to me, and he fell to his knees, and he's like, I'm so ashamed to be in front of you. I was like, huh? He's through my translator. He's telling me this. He's like, I'm a Muslim. I don't believe what you believe. But I know that you're doing what God wants you to do. And I was like, well, I wish I could say that all the time, but okay, thank you. I was like, wow, I don't know what's exciting. I've never had an experience like this. And he said, and I go, why are you feeling this way? And he's like, well, you're doing what God wants you to do, and I know that I don't do what God wants me to do. And so I'm ashamed to be before you. And he kissed my hand, and he's like, it's such an honor to see you work. And I told the translator, just, hey, can you make sure you follow up with this guy? And they said, yeah, absolutely. We'll talk to him and his wife. And it was a really amazing experience. And then we went to, so I spent some time in Iraq, and then in Turkey we did, I think, 5 outreach events. And then we went to Kyrgyzstan for a 2-week tour. And that's the team, same guys I worked with. Their ministry, it's the first time I ever worked with a team where it was not just me doing my whole 90-minute program. They said, hey, you're going to do your program, but we're going to mix in other music. It was amazing. And so we had two violinists, one from America, one from South Korea. We had a musician, a singer and electric guitar player from Hong Kong. We had percussionist. I can manipulate ropes, but I can't say words. We had one, he was from Ukraine. We had a drummer from France. People from all over. We had a singer from Kentucky, and we had a bass player from Kyrgyzstan. Kyrgyzstan is a Muslim country in Central Asia, considered that unreached part of the world. I always thought that the name stands were unreachable, that you couldn't, I could never go there because I couldn't openly share the gospel. But I've learned my lesson. I've shared the gospel openly in China and Lebanon and Egypt and Bangladesh, closed countries that are considered illegal to go and proselytize. And here's the neat thing. Is that, yes, tent making is one way to do it, but what these guys are doing and what I've experienced over the last 15 years in using creative performing arts to share the gospel. We can draw a crowd, you build a relationship with the crowd, and that gives you permission to be able to share the gospel freely. So I'm going to share, this is just a couple of the audience, I'm going to share a quick video of the YouTube video, if you wouldn't mind. Thank you so much for being a part of this fellowship and supporting this fellowship. They were able to, because of just an extra generosity of giving, I was just telling Bo what I was getting ready to do, and he's like, well, what do you need? And I said, well, yeah, I also work I'm also a tent maker. I work a part-time job, but this is what I want to do full-time. And he's like, well, how can we get you on this trip? And so the church here sent me to be a part of this. And in fact, if you want to follow my next mission, I'm getting ready to go back to Egypt in October, back to Kyrgyzstan, and spend some time in Turkey as well. I'll probably be gone for maybe a month to a month and a half here in the fall. If you want to follow what I'm doing, I've got an email sometimes I'll send out just updates of what's going on, or you can just Facebook me. But I've got little sign-up sheets in the foyer or down here. Just jot down your name and your email address. And if you want to get involved, leave your phone number. I'll give you a call. I'd love to dialogue with you personally. So thank you so much for allowing me to share today. And again, just to sort of summarize, pray and ask God to send workers into the harvest. What I am seeing is that creative performing art is a powerful tool in getting into places that people can't normally get into. Like I said, I've shared and I've done outreach events in like the Beijing National Library Theater, where they actually sold tickets and posters, and they promoted the event, and I openly shared the gospel with 1,100 university students. And I couldn't believe it. And same with in Lebanon and Beirut. I had Hezbollah calling my pastor saying, hey, you guys better stop what you're doing, or otherwise you're going to get in trouble. And we just did the shows anyway, and we shared the gospel openly. We didn't hold anything back. And yet God was there, and people were... And same with Turkey and Kyrgyzstan. I thought it was a closed country. Yes, the police stopped us, asked us why we were in the country halfway through the tour, and I had to go and prove that I was an illusionist by standing in front of the police station and do a couple tricks. As soon as I levitated a dollar bill, he's like, all right, get out of here. But it was a really amazing tour, and I'm really looking forward to going back. If you want to know about this particular ministry that I went on this recent mission trip with, their name is Taco. So if you go to teamtaco.org, they focus only on the Muslim countries of the world. Amazing ministry. They have all kinds of variety performing arts. So if you're a musician, a dancer, a singer, a ventriloquist, a juggler, a unicyclist, whatever it may be, let me know because we can use you. Thanks. You in the dark, but I won't.
Пожалуйста,